Well, hello, and welcome to Let's Talk Health with Dr. Mike, and this is Michael Wolfeld. I'm the staff naturopath with PHP, Purium Health Products. And, of course, I like to say that Purium supplies superfoods for superhumans. That's my little logo that I like to promote. And what I'd like to start off with is an idea that I think is worthwhile to keep in mind as we do these kinds of things. No matter what you're listening to, no matter what you're reading, it's useless unless you're going to put it into practice. Now, a good example of this is a friend of mine likes to say, does it do you any good, if you're hungry, does it do you any good to read a cookbook? Read all those nice recipes and so on and so forth. Obviously, it doesn't do anything for your hunger. You've got to take one of the recipes and you have to take the ingredients, make them as instructed, if that's what you want to do, and then be able to consume what you've put together. So in other words, it's all about experience. That is the name of the game. And so I would really behoove all of us, I'm talking to myself at this point too, because we're all in the same boat together, that if we're going to spend our quality time and we're going to listen to something and try and learn something, it really is only going to be helpful if we put it into practice. That is crucial. So tonight, we are going to be talking about the magical ingredient for health and happiness. And the byline said, easy to use, great results. Now, you're probably wondering what this magical ingredient is. And it's something that we're all familiar with. It's not anything that's really mysterious. It's called willpower. And the interesting thing about willpower, and by the way, I'm going to be talking from an article that was written by a PhD by the name of Kelly McGonigal, and this was printed by Avery Publishing, which is, I guess, a division of Penguin Group. So I believe it's available. And this Dr. McGonigal is actually an award-winning health psychologist who teaches at Stanford University, and he's a health instructor for the Stanford School of Medicine. Now, what is interesting is Kelly offered a course called The Science of Willpower at Stanford. And they started off thinking, well, okay, you know, we had a classroom. They had to change their classroom, I believe, four times because more and more people wanted to sign up for it. This is how popular the subject is. And more people would say when they're asked about willpower, their response is, oh, that's exactly what I need. And more than ever, people really understand that they do need willpower because willpower helps us to control attention. It helps us to control emotions, desires, and obviously influences, you know, on our physical health, our finances, our relationships, you know, our professional successes and, you know, how we spend our time. And people know that they're supposed to be in control of every aspect of their lives, but, I mean, let's face it, it's not an easy thing to do. And most people actually feel like they are willpower failures. You know, the controlling things for one moment, but then overwhelmed and out of control the very next. And according to the American Psychological Association, lack of willpower is the number one reason people cite for the reason that they don't meet their goals. And people end up feeling guilty, you know, feel like they've let themselves and others down. And many people feel that they're at the mercy of their thoughts, their emotions, you know, their cravings. And that their lives are actually dictated by impulse rather than conscious choices. So, what we're going to try and do is give some simple ideas about how we can utilize willpower in a constructive way that won't add more stress to our lives, will actually relieve us of some of our stress. Now, when most people think about willpower, the classic response is, well, willpower is resisting temptation. You know, whether temptation is having a donut or a cigarette or, you know, going to a clearance sale. And so when people normally say I have no willpower, they actually are saying I have trouble saying no when my mouth or stomach or heart or whatever, you know, wants to say yes. So it's more like I won't power. But saying no to something is just one part of what willpower is and what it requires. Because just say no, you know, are three favorite words of people who are procrastinators and couch potatoes and so on and so forth. So we don't want to go there either. So sometimes it's actually more important and valuable to be able to say yes. Because putting things off for tomorrow just simply creates more anxiety. So it's more like the ability to do what we need to do, even if part of you doesn't want to do it. So I will and I won't power are like two sides of self-control. Now, many people that I talk to will use the word victim. You know, they feel a victim of their own mind. And obviously that can really weigh on our health. So, in other words, what we really want to be able to do is learn how to say no when we need to say no and to say yes when we need to say yes. So, really, the third power that we need to access is the ability to remember what we really want. Now, what we really want is not necessarily the brownie or another drink or, you know, a day off or whatever. Okay, so in other words, sometimes it's very subtle. Often it's very subtle. So, to be able to really be honest with ourselves and remember what we really want is crucial. And for example, if we decided that we want to be healthy, if we want to be calm, then those are things that we need to write down. And we need to really put it into our minds so that when we are facing the temptations, when we're facing stressful situations, and we know all of us do that, we want to be able to remind ourselves what the goals are, what we really want. And of course, we want to make sure that what we really want is worthwhile to have. That's also important. So in other words, willpower is actually about harnessing, you know, these three powers of I will, I won't, and I want to help achieve the goals. So the advantage that we have as humans, which animals don't have, is we have brains that will support these capacities. In fact, the development of these powers, I will, I won't, I want, actually may define what it means to be a human being. It really does set us apart. So, the first rule of what we're trying to accomplish and what we need to think about is to know thyself. So self-control is actually one of mankind's most fabulous abilities. But it's not necessarily our only distinction, because we also have self-awareness. Animals don't have that. We have the ability to realize what we're doing as we do it and understand why we're doing it. No other creature can do that. And if we're really given any thought to what we're about to do or done, we can also usually predict what we're likely to do before we actually do it. So in other words, it gives us an ample opportunity to reconsider what we're going to do. Now, this kind of self-awareness is quite unique to humans. Now, of course, you know, we know that they're like smart the dolphins and elephants. You know, they can see themselves in a mirror. They recognize who they are, blah, blah, blah. But that is a different kind of self-awareness. They don't have the cognitive ability to make these kinds of self-control decisions. So we need to be aware and recognize that when we are making a choice, that does require willpower. Because otherwise, we are always going to default to an easier path. I mean, the good example is the person who's trying to, you know, the smoker, is trying to quit smoking. So they may recognize the craving, and, you know, in other words, if they're not really prepared to look at the mechanism of what the individual goes through when they smoke, it's more than likely they're just simply going to light up, and then after they've lit up, they're going to say, oh, I thought I didn't want to smoke. Okay, so in other words, without this awareness, the self-awareness, the idea of changing habits is totally doomed. Now, most psychologists do recognize that desires are pretty much on autopilot. And there's not a lot of awareness in terms of what's driving them. And often not any reflection going on in terms of the consequences once we've done it. In fact, psychologists have determined that much of the time we don't even realize we're making a choice. Now, there was a study that was done that asked people how many food-related decisions they made in one day and said, what would you say? On average, people guess 14. In reality, when these same folks carefully track their decisions, the average was 227. That's more than 200 choices people were initially unaware of. And those are just about eating. So in other words, how can we control ourselves if we're not even aware that there's something to control? And this is really an interesting idea. This takes some you know, introspection, some thought. But if we're trying to become better people, not only healthy but happy, we have to take some time and do some work on awareness. Now, society today, of course, is loaded with constant distractions, tons of stimulation, and none of this helps us. Now, a professor of marketing at Stanford Graduate School of Business has shown that people who are distracted are more likely to give in to temptations. And it said the example, students trying to remember a telephone number are 50% more likely to choose chocolate cake over fruit at a snack cart. Distracted shoppers are more susceptible to in-store promotions and more likely to go home with items not on their shopping list. When your mind is preoccupied, your impulses, not your long-term goals, guide your choices. So that's not a pretty picture. Okay, so in other words, we have to stay awake. Now, at first, this sounds like it's a stressful exercise. And it's going to be a little bit stressful when we first start doing it. So obviously, it's not about putting more stress on you. It's about realizing the value that we're going to get. So are you going to change overnight and start doing all this with complete awareness about everything you're doing? No. I've been working on this for a long time, and I don't do it. But I'm a lot better than I used to be. And so it really is all about one step at a time. Now, one thing that's interesting is it turns out that the natural evolution, as a lot of people want to say, of millions of years, it's taken to deliver what's called a prefrontal cortex that is actually capable of what humans need. And it's been determined that it's possible to make our brains even better at self-control without having to hang around for, you know, another million years or so. So since the beginning of time, you know, or at least obviously since researchers started poking and prodding the brain, it was assumed that the brain was fixed in structure. In other words, whatever brain power you had was a done deal. You know, it wasn't a work in progress, and the only change your brain was going to see was deterioration when you got old. But the last decade, neuroscientists have discovered, like an eager student, the brain is remarkably responsible to experience. So ask your brain to do math every day, and it gets better at math. Ask your brain to worry, it gets better at worrying. Ask your brain to concentrate, and it gets better at concentrating. Now, not only does your brain actually find these things easier to do, but it actually remodels itself based on what you're asking it to do. So science has determined, these neuroscientists studying people's brains, that some parts of the brain actually grow denser, packing in more and more what's called gray matter, just like a muscle person bulking up from exercise. Now, an example is adults who learn how to juggle develop more gray matter in regions of the brain that track moving objects. Areas of the brain can also grow more connected to each other, so they share information more quickly. For example, adults who play memory games for 25 minutes a day develop greater connectivity between brain regions important for attention and memory. Okay, but brain training isn't just for juggling and remembering, you know, where you left your glasses. There's now a growing scientific evidence that you can train your brain to get better at self-control. So in other words, what does willpower training for your brain look like? Well, you could challenge your, you know, I won't power by planting temptation traps around your home, chocolate bar in your sock drawer, cigarettes in your exercise bike, or, you know, you could build your I willpower course, you know, with stations that require you to drink wheatgrass juice, do 20 jumping jacks, or file your taxes early, or whatever. Or something a lot easier and simpler. Neuroscientists have discovered that even short periods of meditation not only improve the ability to meditate, but increase a wide range of self-control skills, including attention, focus, stress management, impulse control, and self-awareness. Now, when we're talking about meditation, we're not talking about people doing this for hours. Even 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes in the evening before you go to bed, that alone can have a marked improvement. So people who meditate, science says, regularly, aren't just better at these things. Over time, their brains become finely tuned willpower machines. And the regular meditators have more gray matter in the prefrontal cortex as well as regions of the brain that support self-awareness. Now, it doesn't take a lifetime, you know, of meditation to change the brain. Researchers have started to look for even the smallest dose of meditation needed to see benefits. And these studies take people who have never meditated before, even folks who are skeptical of the whole thing, and teach them a simple meditation technique, like just watching your breath. And one study found that just 3 hours of meditation practice, this isn't 3 hours at a time, this is 3 hours spread over a month maybe, okay, led to improved attention and self-control. And after 11 hours, researchers could see these changes in the brain. The new meditators had increased neural connections between regions of the brain important for staying focused, ignoring distractions, and controlling impulses. Another study found that 8 weeks of daily meditation practice led to increased self-awareness in everyday life, as well as increased gray matter in corresponding areas of the brain. Now, what's interesting about this is by just doing this, by being disciplined enough to spend 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes at night, sitting calmly, watching your breath, for example. I mean, there's all sorts of meditation techniques you can do. And if you can include enthusiasm and love into it, you're going to be light years ahead of just the person who's just simply trying to put in the time. But it's a whole bunch better than the idea of trying to repress something that you want to do. That doesn't ever work, only short term. And sometimes short term is valuable. I mean, like, for example, if you have a tendency to punch people, that's not a real socially acceptable thing to do. And so that's a good idea to control it any way you have, even if you're suppressing the desire to want to punch someone out. But that doesn't solve the problem in the long run. You still have to work on where it came from. And that's where the idea of changing the brain is powerful. Now, it may seem incredible that our brains can reshape themselves so quickly, but the meditation that's been studied increases blood flow to the prefrontal cortex in much the same way that lifting weights increases blood flow to your muscles. The brain appears to adapt to exercise in the same way that muscles do, getting both bigger and faster in order to get better at what you ask of it. And this is the closest thing that scientists have found to speeding up what's considered evolution and making the most of our brain's potential. Now, here's the good news. A lot of people will sit and try and meditate, and their mind is all over the place. I know mine is, many times. But science has actually determined that even struggling with your little 5-minute meditation is good for self-control afterwards. So the example is, Andrew felt like a terrible meditator. He was ready to give up on the practice because he wasn't getting better at it as quickly as he hoped and figured he was wasting his time if he wasn't able to focus perfectly on his breath. Most new meditators make this mistake, but the truth is that even being bad at meditation can make the practice effective. So this doctor encouraged Andrew and all other frustrated meditators that were in class to pay attention not just to how well they were focusing during the meditation, but how it was affecting their focus and choices during the rest of the day. And Andrew and others found that even when his meditation felt distracted, he was more focused after practicing than if he had skipped it completely. He also realized that what he was doing in meditation was exactly what he needed to do in real life. Catch himself moving away from a goal and then point himself back at the goal, in this case, focusing on the breath. The meditation was perfect practice for when he was just about to order something salty, deep-fried for lunch, and he needed to stop, think, and order something healthier. So in other words, it was actually the perfect practice for when he had a sarcastic comment on his lips, you know, and needed to pause so he could hold his tongue and not say it. And it was perfect practice for noticing when he was wasting time at work and needed to get back on track. And so all day long, self-control was a process of noticing that he was off goal and redirecting himself to the goal without getting mad at himself. So that's what's really cool about this. And like I said, we're only talking 5 minutes. If you want to do 10, you want to do 15, great. But it's just about time out, and doing this kind of exercise is the most phenomenal way to gain self-awareness, because you start to think about yourself in a completely different way. And I've been doing this for 30 years, and it works. So thanks to the complex architecture of the modern human brain, we each have multiple impulses that compete for control of our thoughts, feelings, and actions. And every willpower challenge is a battle among different versions of ourselves. So to put the higher self in charge, we simply need to strengthen our self-awareness and self-control. And when you spend that 5 minutes and you're meditating, that's exactly what you're doing. You're putting your higher self in charge. And when you do this, it's easy to find that willpower and want power to do the right thing at the right time. And that's pretty cool. Now, I realize this is a lot of information, and I don't expect that you're going to remember it, but that's why it's recorded, and so you may want to listen to this again. You also might want to actually find this article. And like I said, it was printed, it was published by Penguin Group, and the author's name is Kelly McGonigal, and that last name is spelled M-C, capital G-O-N-I-G-A-L. And Kelly is a professor at Stanford University. And I think that if you apply this even in small amounts, start off slow. Start off with 2 minutes twice a day. Whatever you can, but just give yourself a commitment that you're going to start taking responsibility so that you can be self-aware. And like I said, if you do this, it helps to add enthusiasm. It helps to add a sense of love, love for your higher self. In other words, you're doing this as a gift to your higher nature, so that your higher nature can start being more in charge. Now, obviously, this fits right in with what we as a company at Purium do, because we're talking about making healthy food choices. And a lot of you already do that, but a lot of people simply get into ruts of making choices that aren't for the best and then regret it later. And so this is a way to really deal with that. Well, friends, it's been a pleasure as always to be with you. And I do recommend that you perhaps listen to this again. It'll be in the back office, I believe, as of tomorrow. Share this with your friends and customers. It's something that, like I said, this professor who offered the class went from, I think, originally having like 25 in the class to over 200 and kept having to get bigger and bigger classrooms because it was that much in demand. Phenomenal. And that's why I thought it would be a good idea to offer this. Now, once again, any questions relating to not only what we talked about tonight or using Purium products or health questions or life questions, whatever, you're always welcome and encouraged to call me at 800-962-5433. That's 800-962-LIFE. And you can give my number to other people, even if they're not members of PHP yet. We're here to serve. And you can also email me, of course, at askphpdoc@gmail.com. And my contact information, along with my picture, is on the PHP website. I think it's in two different places. So, my friends, it's been a pleasure to be with you. Take good care. God bless. And bye for now.